Next step number 23, November 19, 2008.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life and inspecting the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center in Glendale, and is brought to you exclusively by the good folks at the Apostles' Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Oh, it is so good to be back here with you. I don't think I could have made it another day without short-circuiting. Gotta tell you, this week has been so filled with just information and people going crazy with the world situation and turning to religion. And every day would go by and I'd say, hey, look at that story in the news. Listen to what they're saying over there. Everything seems to be tied with religion and spirituality. And it's almost like the world is ready to blow up at the seams. So where does everybody run? But back to religion, back to their faith. And yes, it is almost like a drug. And I know some of you listeners took offense that I quoted Karl Marx last week, but it is so appropriate when he says that religion is the opium of the people. Yes, this is what he's talking about. That, you know, some people take drugs and other people turn to Jesus. Other people turn to religion. And, you know, and they're both quick fixes if you take them in those in that manner. If that faith isn't something that you're built upon, if that faith isn't something that is real in your life every single day, but is taken just as a pill or as a narcotic, yes, that's all it's going to do. It's going to make you feel good for the short run, but in the long term, you are going to miss out.
Quite a cigar, Mr. Potter.
You like it?
I'll send you a box.
I suppose I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly do you want to see me about?
Oh, George, now that's just what I like so much about you. George, I am an old man. Most people hate me, but I don't like them either, so that makes it all even. You know just as well as I do that I run practically everything in this town, but the Bailey Building alone. You know also that for a number of years I've been trying to get control of it, or kill it, but I haven't been able to do it. You have been stopping me. In fact, you have beaten me, George. And as anyone in this county can tell you, that takes some doing. Now, take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan. I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers.
Yes, that, of course, from Jimmy Stewart's famous movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, that's that scene with Potter where Potter says, everybody is going crazy, but you and I kept our head. And it's important to keep our head. It's important to understand that these are regular cycles that we go through. But, of course, with that, we have to also realize that what we go through in the world today we've never experienced before. It is truly unique. Because yes, you can point to the Great Depression.
Made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee Doodle Dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Yes, the Great Depression was out there, and it was a tragedy, and people standing in bread lines, and you had this incredible downturn of the economy. But today is unique. It doesn't resemble things in the past, as the Depression did not resemble things in its past because of the time period it's in. And certainly what's going on right now is unique to 2008. And today we have a globalized economy. We have globalization. Good or bad, it's a reality that is connecting us in ways that we've never thought before. Just the idea that I'm sitting here in Glendale doing this podcast, and this podcast has listeners on the European continent as well as the Asian continent, is mind-boggling. When I get responses from people from Argentina about a podcast we're doing over here or an article that we've written, tells you that what we say over here affects others in a unique manner, and just the same way, reciprocally, what they do in their countries affects us in a very special and unique manner. So this depression, this recession, is something that is bigger than we've ever experienced before. And people are turning to different means for help. There was these myths during the 1929 depression that on Wall Street, and I say myths because there was, I think somebody did a study later on and found out that, yes, these weren't true. These were just sort of these rumors that went out there, but these stories about how the Wall Street giants would throw themselves out of the windows. And, you know, there's different ways that people cope. And certainly when I said a few minutes ago about religion being this opium that Karl Marx talks about, of course, in his manifesto, his communist manifesto, what he was trying to do is discount all of religion. And I'm not here to tell you that, but what I am telling you is that religion has to have some more meaning than just existing in your difficulties, as just being real when you're on a down. You don't just show up at church, and you can, but it doesn't have the same meaning as to the person who is full of faith at all times. And that faith carries you through. And so there's never been a better time to connect to your faith than right now. But in connecting, let's not forget it. Let's not leave it there as some extra added dimension that I could take off or take or put on like the shirt on my back. Today I'm going to be talking to you about a few different topics about cults. We're going to be talking about Advent. You know, this Sunday is the period of Advent. It starts for us. We're going to be talking about some of the Thanksgiving themes that we talked about last week. You know, I got some interesting email, one from a guy named Mardik in New Jersey, who mentioned that I shouldn't discount the power of taste. Apparently, when I was talking about Thanksgiving, I discounted the meal, the Thanksgiving meal. And he said that when you're talking about holistic, that the Armenian Orthodox faith is holistic. In other words, it challenges all of our senses. Don't discount the sense of taste, because it is an important one. And certainly it is. I mean, when you talk about that turkey meal, that roasted turkey, and you look at the gravy and the stuffing. And sometimes on Armenian tables, they put the Armenian pilaf and the... Okay, back to reality. We are not talking about that. But I agree, Mardik. I don't want to discount the taste. But I asked you last week, I said, be patient with me because I will show you within this next few weeks. I promised you, in fact, I will show you how holistic our Armenian Orthodox faith is. In fact, so much so that you will taste it. In fact, let me give you a clue. In the Balarak, we say, Jashagetsek yev desek zikach tzereder. Come and taste of it, for the Lord is tasty. So we will be talking about it. And in fact, next week, I'm going to be doing a special Thanksgiving podcast where we will be making the connection, the holistic connection. Like when you go to Badarak, did you know that it requires all of your senses? And that's why we had the copyright on the holistic part. We're going to be talking about that as we did last week. We're going to be talking about that next week as well. We're going to make a conclusion out of last week's, today's, and next week's as the Thanksgiving feast approaches. But thanks again, Mardik, for that. And yes, incense, lights, candles, heat, they challenge all of our senses, as does taste. And I did get a couple of interesting comments from our listeners about the idea of connecting Thanksgiving and love, the idea that we've never really looked at it in those terms. But yes, Thanksgiving is the foundation for love, because when you give thanks, you're acknowledging that there is something greater than you. And this last Sunday, I was reflecting with some of our parishioners. Somebody reminded us of a story. When I was teaching over in Pasadena, I'll never forget this. I was up in the second story of the school building, the St. Gregory Hovsepian School. And I was teaching religion up there to the 7th or 8th graders when we heard this screaming, this loud voice of a little child. And teachers, we came running downstairs, and sure enough, in the bathroom was a little one of the students who had sort of gotten trapped in there. It wasn't locked to say, but it was sort of like trapped. The door had slammed behind him, and we went, and the principal came over, opened up the door, and the baby, or I say baby, the little kid was crying and scared, and ran over to the teacher, and of course got a lot of hugs and sympathy, and we were all relieved. But as I thought about it, that kid, that student in the bathroom was reaching out for a savior, acknowledged that there was a power greater than himself that was necessary to save him. I want you to think about that in terms of Thanksgiving. When we come down on our knees, what are we saying? We're saying that there is a power that is greater than us. That child in the bathroom was acknowledging in his cries that there was something necessary to save him. And I think each of us looks for this salvation outside of ourselves. And we got to remember that, yes, the doors may seem locked, may be big, but if we just give it a chance, we can find the answers. Some from outside, some with a principal and a teacher coming up or a priest coming up and opening the door, but some of it requires us to cry out, in other words, acknowledge the difficulty that we're having, and then at that point to make some conscious effort to move in that direction, to rectify the situation. And if it means yelling out more, if it means just reaching up and opening the door, one way or another, we find that the answers exist there, but it's up to us to consciously take those steps. Well, Thanksgiving is the basis of that. Thanksgiving means we consciously acknowledge that our situation is okay. Last week, that's what we were talking about. It's not a comparison of, oh, thank God that I don't have cancer. Thank God that I don't live in the war zone. Thank God that my children didn't get run over today. But it's thanking God that I have the things that I do have. It's not the negative reality that's important as much as that positive reality that we can say is the only thing that really exists. I mean, when we talk about the terms of time, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, the only reality is today. I mean, tomorrow may come or it may not come. For certain people in this lifetime, tomorrow may never come. Yesterday is only something that exists in memory. So the only real time that we do have is today. And what we do today is very important. Jesus' command about living the day for its today. Set your mind on God's kingdom and all else will follow. What does he mean by that? That the kingdom is right now. Not something to be enacted, but is in it enacted. Jesus' presence, that God became human, that God took human flesh, was the enactment of the kingdom in our midst right now. That opportunity to plug in and become that person that you are meant to be. So, Thanksgiving holds a key to our understanding of the bigger puzzle. In other words, when we get down on our knees, when we sit down at a Thanksgiving meal, when we say thanks to God, we're saying that, yes, there is something that is greater than myself, that is worthy of not only me, but the collective acknowledgement of the group. And this is very important, because what are we talking about here? We're talking about the church. We're talking about the body. We're talking about people coming together, sharing, uniting, extending hands to one another, and becoming collectively one voice of praise, of thanksgiving. So what happens at that point? We acknowledge that there is power beyond ourselves, and in that acknowledgement, we humble ourselves. We humble ourselves before God. And this is very, very important to get into our heads right now at the beginning of Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is not about us. It's not about like how great that turkey could be, but how great our joy can be in sharing, in reaching out, in extending ourselves in all possible directions. And when you think about it, what does Christ want us to do anyway? What is the one commandment that he has for us? Love one another. Take care of one another. Well, how do you do that? How do you love one another if not by first and foremost forgetting yourself? By realizing that there are others. There are people that are worth serving. And that's what the church has been called to do. To become the body of Christ here on earth. What would Christ do? Christ would extend himself. Christ would help. Would care about other people. What should you do as the body of Christ? You should extend yourself. You should help. You should love. You should care for others. And those are the expressions that are very, very important. So thank you for those comments about Thanksgiving. And I promised you, this is all going to come together next week. And I'm going to stick to that promise, because we're going to be talking about that holistic approach. I also got some mail from listeners about the 76-year-old woman talking about reaching out. Yes, we do a reach out to Skid Row people, and I talked briefly about the 76-year-old woman who was first time on Skid Row and how our group was very affected. I do want to let you know that one of our bloggers, actually my sister Anush, just true to her name, an Anush person, she blogged, and I want to invite you to our site, because when I read that, I read it right after we did last week's podcast, and it reminded me that there is a whole slew of information. People are writing me and asking me, how can we get more connected? Definitely go to our website, inhisshoes.org. Up at the right-hand corner, there's a small button. It says, My Church. Press on that button. That will take you to a login menu. Register yourself. It's not intrusive. You're not going to get all kinds of garbage. You're not going to get people selling you land in Nairobi or anything like that. What you are going to get is an opportunity to connect to a group of people who are doing some incredible work. And these are the people from InIssues Ministries, from the St. Peter Youth Ministry Center in Glendale. These are people who are making applications of their faith. And there are some great blogs on there, especially about this woman. You want to check that out. That's in Anush's blog, but you can check out some of the other blogs that talk about the the opportunities that we have to reach out and care about people, and how that is, that has affected others. And I got to tell you, reading these stories, you change. You realize that there are some very, very important things in life, and you thank God that you have this opportunity today to be plugged into the next step, to be plugged into my church, to really share with some people that are really alive with faith. So I want to just steer you in that direction if you're concerned about that. And finally, we did get a message from our good friend Ben Kayumba in Rwanda. He writes that he needs prayers. The situation with neighboring Congo in Africa, of course, is getting very bad, very difficult. And you know, in the Congo, there has been so much murder and blood and bloodshed. That entire region of Africa has gone through so much, from famines to droughts to genocide, and really has become the focus for us at InHisShoes Ministry over the last several years. And I encourage you to keep them in prayer. By praying for them, you wake up to the realities that are going on over there. So, Ben, all the best to you, and know that there is a community over here that does care and loves you very much. And we extend our prayers and ask for God's blessings upon you, your family, your people, and especially that very special virtue of patience to all of you. Well, it's been about 2 weeks since Senator Obama became President-elect Obama, and it's interesting, all the stuff that's going on in the world. You keep reading about it, you hear about clergy fearing the aggressive pro-abortion legislation that's about to come out from the Obama administration, and there's always this fear of the unknown, isn't there? You hear about the Catholics and their excommunicating different people who might side with the Obama administration. And there was an interesting one about Vice President Biden, Vice President-elect, I should say, Biden, about him, of course, being Catholic, and about the possibility of excommunicating him because of his pro-abortion stand. And so all of these things, like I said earlier, are taking place in the broader context of our lives, and certainly faith plays into all that, and we need to mellow out a bit, take a little bit of a breath, and understand that all of these things are also, in many ways, scapegoats for the bigger issues that are taking place. Case in point, here in California, the Mormons spent an incredible large amount of money to pass Proposition 8. This was the gay marriage ban. Basically, for us in California, the law that was just passed, or Proposition 8, I should say, that was just passed, said that marriage is between a man and a woman. That defined the word marriage. And of course, gay rights, gay and lesbian associations got together and fought this and said that no, there shouldn't be a ban. And there was a lot of fear on both sides. Those people that wanted to ban gay marriages were saying that you're going to be taught this and your children are going to be shoveled a lot of stuff in their schools about it, and they're going to be forced into these relationships. And the people on the other side who were opposed to the ban were talking about, again, the same fearful rhetoric, and talking about, well, you know, this is just the start of Nazi concentration camps and gulags, and you know how it goes, like the fear coming in there. And both sides went at it, and we're hearing a lot about it. But you know, all of these are really scapegoats for bigger issues that are taking place. And I keep saying this, and I will not tire of saying this, because as a clergyman, as a minister of the gospel, as a priest of the Christian church, where my leader is called the Prince of Peace, there is no other bigger issue than the issue of war right now. And it's a shame that they're spending millions of dollars on these kind of things that are taking people's mind away from what should be the focus of every person's mind. That there is a war going on right now in Iraq. There is a war going on in Afghanistan that we have control over as Americans, that we could spend that money. In other words, the same people that are talking about these kind of propositions and things should be focusing in on what is important in the world. I said a few minutes ago about the Congo. We know about Darfur. These tragedies continue. We need to wake up. If we're talking seriously that we are ministers of the Prince of Peace, is there anything greater to talk about than the peace and stability of the countries, of the planet? And these are issues that we need to really start addressing. Yeah, you know, we need to define marriage. We need to talk about this. It's very clear in my mind. We know what the church says. Marriage is between a man and a woman. Okay, nobody's going to change our mind. You could enact all the legislation you want, but that's what the rules of the church are. And the answer is, if you want to get married, you want to have a civil union, you want to have whatever, you don't need to do it through the church too, right? Somebody doesn't like that, they don't need to do it through the church. But the church has its own rules, just as the Mormons have their own rules. And everybody's entitled to those under the Constitution of the United States. You're entitled to do what you want in terms of religion. And so on the plus side, we want to remember that this past week, Pope Benedict the 16th, yes, Papa, he met with some Catholic, Roman Catholic, and Muslim leaders, and they came up with a statement on some of their mutual concerns and mutual beliefs. And this was very, very interesting. I'm not really a big fan of these kind of ecumenical meetings too much because one day I'll tell you why I'm not a big fan. And we got to keep some things for mystery too. But let me go in and tell you about what they came up with. They agreed from a declaration of the Muslim and Catholic leaders who met at the Vatican this past month, they agreed upon this. It says, "We are convinced that Catholics and Muslims have the duty to provide a sound education in human, civic, religious, and moral values for their respective members and to promote accurate information about each other's religions. We profess that Catholics and Muslims are called to be instruments of love and harmony among believers and for humanity as a whole, renouncing any opposition, aggressive violence, and terrorism, especially that committed in the name of religion and upholding the principle of justice for all." Well, that's beautiful. And I think that any time that a group of religious leaders can come up with these kind of solutions, it's up to us as people to look at that and say that, yes, what is the bottom line that they're talking about? Again, it is peace. It is harmony. It is the same peace, that same harmony that we've been talking about, that has been talked about since the beginning of time. Because all of religion, all of faith has to unite us under that common ground, the ability to get along with one another. You know what? I had some more stuff that I wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to talk to you about the Twilight series that's coming about. Author Stephanie Meyer, who's teaching teen morality laced with vampires and sexual tensions. We're going to be talking about that probably in an upcoming podcast. It looks like our time is a little bit more limited today, and I do want to get to the key story of today, which is about cults. Oh, that was nice music. Good taste, Ken. Well, let's not go with your taste today, Ken. I'll just say it's a very appropriate, good, appropriate music, Ken. Thank you. We're going to be talking about cults, I said. And of course, this week marks the 30th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre. And those of you who remember 1978, and those of you who were not even born at that time, yes, and it's hard to believe that we do have listeners, and I'm very happy we do. We have listeners who weren't even born that time, who aren't even that old. Yes, the younger ones. I'm very pleased that they listen, and I don't want to alienate them. So let me tell you a little bit about what happened. But back in 1978, a group got together under the name of the People's Temple, and their leader was Jim Jones, and took him out to Guyana, to a town called Jonestown, a little bit off of Georgetown, which is the capital over there. And they were there as a commune, as a small little cult. And on November 18th, 1978, they found over 900, I can't remember if it was 910 or 920 people who were dead. They had been apparently poisoned by suicide, and hence began this cliche, or this metaphor of drinking the Kool-Aid, because the talk was that they were all given this deadly Kool-Aid laced with cyanide, and they all drank it. And hence that cliche that if somebody drinks the Kool-Aid, they are done for. They have already dropped it, in a sense, have been brainwashed, and have fallen into the trap of the cult, or have totally given themselves up to something. So this is where it begins, drinking the Kool-Aid. And so it was in Jonestown that over 900 people were found dead, and all because they followed this leader, Jim Jones. And it was this is the story of religion gone wrong. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. It's not so much about defining cults and what is cults, because it's not a question of, is my religion better than yours? I don't like, you know, people sometimes send me these kind of little brochures and pamphlets about this is this religion, and watch out for that guy because that guy believes in this or that. I mean, you know, think about it. Do you remember last week what hit the airwaves? I mean, it was an embarrassment. Did you see that little news clip about what happened in Jerusalem between the Armenian and Greek monks? I mean, think about that. I mean, think about if you have no clue as to what Orthodox Christians are, and you see this all of a sudden in Jerusalem, and you see these guys with these pointed hats, the Armenian monks, fighting. And I'm not talking about just yelling. I'm talking about raising fists and hitting and getting hit at by Greek monks with the flat tops. And here they are back and forth coming at each other. And if you were just a bystander looking at that, you would certainly say, hey, there's something wrong with this religion. There's a religion gone wrong. But you know what? Until you're in it, and I'm not making any excuses, because I found it rather odd, and you know, I know that this is just the way of Jerusalem, and that's because of my upbringing as an Armenian priest. I know that this is nothing new. This is just the way of Jerusalem. Inside of Jerusalem, you have certain boundaries that need to be kept, and unless you keep them, you don't have access to them. Because just as that story, if somebody looking from the outside and looks at these monks hitting each other could say, hey, there's something wrong over there. Those are cultic people. Those are cults. Well, they are not cults. They've been around as long as Christianity has been around. And before we get into this discussion of, are you a cult? Am I a cult? Let's just say there's a difference. There are heretics. Heretics are people who skew from the basic doctrine, from the teaching of the church. And this is why in the year 325, the church leadership got together and they said, this is the basic teaching of the church. He who accepts this can be called a Christian. And again, not in the terms of a judgment, but in terms of a definition. Do you want to be a Christian? Well, here's what you got to believe. And they came up with the Nicene Creed in 325. I believe in the Father. I believe in the Son. I believe in the Holy Spirit. I believe in the Church. And these were the elements that people had to accept. And the Nicene Creed is basically the standard, so to speak. We call that the creed, because that defines what a Christian is. And somebody who skews from that, somebody who doesn't accept that, can be called a heretic, but not necessarily a cult. A cult has a destructive element to it. It has a personal element to it. It has a charismatic leader that usually pulls people in, and it has an element of non-thought process. In other words, somebody doing the thinking for you. And if you listen to what we've been talking about from the beginning of these podcasts to our ministry, and what we encourage is not to check in your brain when you come into the church, or not to check in your brain when you turn on this podcast, but really use your brain. God has given you that brain. If He didn't want you to think, you wouldn't be thinking. Hey, that makes sense. Yeah, you need to use your brain. And that's the challenge. That's the fun of it. That's the part of being human. That's the part of having reasoning powers. God's given you that brain. Take advantage of it and use it. But the submission means a submission completely and totally to God. Doesn't mean it to just for the sake of submitting. It means to lose the self. Now, in the case of the cults, again, you can look at it and there's all kinds of definitions. I want to point you to a couple really important articles that you do need to take a look at, because those are important, especially in terms of the Armenian Church. There's an excellent group of articles that appeared in 1991 in a publication called Window View of the Armenian Church, and these are readily available online if you do a Google search, and I'll see about getting a link up to this on our show notes for this week, definitely on the Apostle Ministry website or in His Shoes. But there is an article by Father Simeon Odabashian. He wrote this in 1991 when he was yet a deacon, and just an incredible piece about what is a cult. And he discusses the different dimensions and different aspects of that. So check that out. And again, I'll try to put up some links up on our website so you can get it quickly. And I challenge you to really open up your mind and learn about what's a cult and what are the dangers of cults. Because certainly this is what happened in Jonestown. And 30 years later, when we come back to it, when we revisit it, it's important to realize that the cults, yes, they do have the destructive power. And yes, you could say, oh, look at them, they took over and they did all these things. But there is another angle to it, which we hesitate to talk about, but we must. And that is that the cults are what they are as strong as they are, because the church itself has been negligent in its duties. Think about that for a moment. When Jesus was in His ministry and the demons, the devil would come up, would they confront Him? Could they confront Him? They couldn't. They would run away. And in the same way, if the church got itself out of all of this stupidity that it's involved in and really focused on what its ministry is all about, in other words, the work of Jesus Christ, there couldn't be room for a cult. I mean, think about that for a moment. If the church is doing the work of Christ, then the cults couldn't exist. So basically, when you see cults existing and finding that those sheep that are herding, that are looking for a way, it's because there has been a father, there has been a mother that has been negligent in its duties. And this is the fault of the church. It's a two-way relationship. It's two ways in everything. And so today, in bringing up this issue of Jonestown, it's a challenge, in a sense, for us to really wake up and realize that all these things we call cults, you know, we call Scientology, we call the Mormons cults, and these are churches with millions and millions of followers and subscribers. And you look at Orthodoxy, which is going back to the roots of Jesus Christ, and you find a handful of people here and there. You find churches that are very lowly frequented, and people sometimes turn and say, oh, wow, you know, there's nobody in church. But, you know, it's not numbers. It is quality, not quantity. Well, you know, that's cute. That's really cute. That's nice. But it's sort of like rationalizing for a failure. If you're doing the work, you know, Jesus Christ never talked about quality over quantity. There was both of them together. Because he had quality, there was always quantity. When you look over and over through the narratives, Jesus Christ is attracting the mobs, the masses, because he has something there. And two, this is the challenge for the church. This is the challenge for each and every one of us, because the church doesn't exist outside of us. It's you and me getting together. It's you and me becoming the church. It's the challenge then for us to say that if there are openings, if there are places where cults have made headway, it's because of our frailties, because of our inadequacy to being able to reach out and really touching the people. I remember back in 1991 when communism collapsed, the cults had a heyday in Armenia. Armenia was one of the, actually it was the smallest republic of the Soviet Union. And you know, you're talking about 70 years of communism, 70 years of atheism. I mean, preached as from the communists. I mean, it was preached as the way of the government, atheism. There is no God. And all of a sudden, when communism collapses and there is a free state, the cults, every cult you could imagine, was inside of Armenia. And it got to a point where the Armenian church was basically the minority. Well, sure, because, you know, the cults took advantage of that time. The Armenian church, being so frail and without its manpower, was sort of put in the back burner. People were going with these interesting and exotic types of religions, until the Armenian church started finding itself. And it's taken, right now it's been 17, 18 years since independence, and right now you're hearing that the Armenian church is finally finding its equilibrium. It's not excelling, but it's got the people now. At least there is a seminary functioning in the Kevorkian Seminary in Echmiadzin, and there's the Vazgenyan Seminary in Lake Sevan, and these are producing the next generation of workers. All this to feed the people, to give the people what they want, which is love and the care that Jesus Christ promised. So I challenge you really to read up on the cults, look at some of it, especially in light of this anniversary of this terrible tragedy of 900 people being killed, drinking the Kool-Aid, and realizing it can happen when we let go of our guards, when we let down our guards. In the gospel, we remember the story of Peter and Jesus following the resurrection. What is Jesus asked Peter, he says, do you love me? And Peter says, of course I do. And what does Jesus say? He doesn't say, come and bring me flowers. Come and wear a special hat for me. Come and leave your beard out for me. Or tighten your whiskers up. No. He says, feed my sheep. And he says, Peter, a second time, do you love me? And Peter says, of course I do. What does Jesus say? He doesn't say, go and get a nice gold ring and go and buy a nice car. And you know what? Get a mansion while you're at it too. But he says, feed my sheep. And the third time, he asks him, Peter, do you love me? And Peter got upset. He says, of course, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus says the same thing. Feed my sheep. Take care of them. It is the commandment that is given to each and every one of us as the successors of Peter. In other words, the successors of the Holy Church of Jesus Christ. Take care of people. And you'll see that people will react to it. People need to be loved. That there is only one true religion. And that is the religion that connects us to one another through the love of Jesus Christ.
In the clear white sands of morning wonder, I take my place with the Lord of the Hills. And the blue white soldiers stand slightly discolored in neat little rows, sporting canvas frills.
Okay, didn't I tell you it was going to be a jam-packed, action-filled episode, and we were bursting at the seams? Well, sure enough, we've come to the end of our podcast, and I haven't even had the opportunity to play for you one of those special tunes that we all been waiting for. And of course, December 18th marks the beginning of a new era of Armenian church music. Yes, Gor Mkhitaryan concert. And last week, you enjoyed the music of Mariam Matosyan. We remind you that her website is mariammatosyan.com. A lot of good music over there. We will supply you with some more next week. But for right now, we're going to be listening to Gor Mkhitaryan off of his new album called The Spirit.
Sachku du, du Luis Hoki, Arans Luis, Achke Havari, yes Zuku du, du Jul Hoki, Arans Jul, Zuke Chi Abri. Jeren, Jeren, Hanen, Yevail Jul Zeken, Nakabri, Yep Sisi, Kene, Kene Zaten, Mernelen Batsi, Alchar Chilini. Chi torni yes martis du kami hogi arants hev kim vaske chi lini. Yes, half kiss, dude.
You heard it first right here on this podcast, on the Next Step podcast. That is Gor Mkhitaryan's Yesach Dulusoki from the latest CD called The Spirit. And if you want to hear the entire Spirit album, it's coming out in less than a month. On December 18th, actually, you can hear the entire thing in concert at Zipper Hall in the heart of Los Angeles in the Music Center area. You will not want to miss this. It is In His Shoes proudly presents Gor Mkhitaryan with Maryam Matossian in a unique concert of spiritual music. And it is the first time, I believe, since the time of Nerses Shnorali, 12th century, 13th century? Should we talk about maybe Sayat Nova coming close? Well, no, I don't want to be so pretentious, but I am excited. And I want you to feel that excitement with me. That's going to be at Zipper Hall, December 18th. You can get all of the details on our website at inhisshoes.org. And of course, you can get your tickets at itsmyseat.com. And all of the information is available on our website. And we encourage you to get there and check it all out. Hey, listen, this Sunday is the beginning of Advent. Advent is the season before Christmas. In Armenian called Hisnag, there is 50 days before Christmas, 50 days before January 6th, and it is a time of preparation. We get you in the mood, prepared for it all, with a special, special podcast next week. On next Wednesday night, we will be dedicating the podcast to Thanksgiving and to the Armenian mystery of Thanksgiving, which is called the Surp Badarak. You will not want to miss next week's podcast. And if you would like a copy of any of our previous sessions, just go to epostle.net. They are so easy. Just right click on any of them and say save to disk, and you've got a permanent copy. Burn it on CD, give it to a friend, email it to a friend. There's millions of ways of getting it, but perhaps the best way is just to go to epostle.net, put your name, your email address in the little box over there, and every Wednesday night you will hear from us. You will get an instant email saying that the next podcast is ready for you. And you don't have to worry about a thing. We're not going to sell your name to AGI, AIG, Honda, or to Ford, or to GM. No matter how big these corporations get, they will never be able to get your name from us, because you have trusted it to us, and we value your trust. Hey, listen, you can tell we're having a great time over here. It's always a pleasure to be able to serve you through these podcasts. Please drop us some email, some feedback at feedback@epostle.net. And always, we'd like to hear from you. If you want to give us some voice feedback, you can call us at area code 626 in the United States, 275-AMEN. It's been a pleasure serving you, and of course, we hope that you have benefited from this podcast as much as we've enjoyed preparing it for you. So for the wonderful staff over at epostle.net, for the people at In His Shoes Ministries, and for us that put together this podcast, for Susie, our producer, for Ken up in the booth, this is Father Voskin, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.